Scott, and of course, Steve Whitmire.
Hey, everyone.
Hey. So I would say, what, about 2 years ago now, Allie? Would that be correct?
Yes, this is our second. This is our second year.
So we've had, I want to say, maybe four semesters. We've been connecting. The Fab Lab has been connecting with the alternative growing methods. Now, the horticulture at Gateway is amazing. It's an amazing program for people who don't know about it.
Yeah, and the really cool part about that is with the horticulture program, we got three great representatives here today. And would you be able to introduce yourselves, please?
My name is Allie Schultz. I teach horticulture in greenhouse operations.
Hi, my name is Brent. I'm a student at the Gateway Technical College greenhouse operations program.
I'm Mike. I'm also a student in the greenhouse operations program.
And what's really cool is both of you are part of this alternative growing class.
Correct.
Correct.
And you're the instructor of it this semester.
I am.
And could you tell us a little bit about what this class entails?
So alternative growing methods involves students learning and interacting with methods outside of conventional growing methods. So hydroponics, aquaponics, green roof systems. And so I thought it was really important that not only could my students grow within these systems, but then they could create and understand a system itself. So I was able to partner with the Fab Lab.
Woohoo!
Because there's a lot of design concepts, and it really helps students think outside the box in terms of, I give them parameters, and they have to meet parameters within the assignment, and it gives them a lot of creativity and freedom to design.
Yeah, and I got to jump in here because I think it was one of those things where alternative growing methods is an amazing example of how we can connect with disciplines that you don't always immediately think advanced manufacturing. So if you're thinking about alternative growing, or you're thinking about agriculture, you're thinking about horticulture, you know, you don't immediately assume you're using computers and digital design and jumping into things. And we've been able to find a really nice overlap on how we can bring into it, because these fields are changing.
So one thing that I found out with going to the Fab Lab is if you have a design that you want for your hydroponic system, you can tailor that specifically to the space that you want.
Yeah.
So if you want something a little smaller, you can get a little smaller. You want a little larger, you can get a little larger.
Yeah, and I would throw in too that our culture has changed a great deal. If you think about micro and macro growing systems, it's become very popular and very trendy, but that is a perfect tie-in to maker cultures, and then Fab Lab definitely can connect you with how to make it. So the trend of people actually growing food, and I think overall that's a really important trend right now, you know, given the state of our environment and the state of our food situation, and perhaps some of you guys can talk a little bit to that. I also have to really give you guys a shout out for the enthusiasm you've brought to advanced manufacturing. A lot of people, when they think of building, don't think of, hey, can I 3D print this part myself? Can I custom design it for my rig? Can I pull stuff out of the garbage or recycling to build my rig? Can I figure out ways to do that? And we do a lot of CNC where you can actually cut plywood. It's a lot like furniture making. So these are things that tie in really good with what you guys are doing. But let's talk a little bit more about the whole trend of micro-growing food and everybody doing it themselves. I mean, it makes sense as a culture, right, moving forward. So I don't know. Brent, what do you think about that?
Micro-growing fruit, food?
Fruit's good,
fruit,
too.
Yeah, fruit.
Either.
I mean, yeah, you could do both. You certainly could. I think it is a good direction, trying to grow your own food and trying to come up with your own systems to do it. I mean, me and Mike will bounce around, you know, riding together in the morning, bounce around ideas for our rigs and machines and, you know, what we can do for it. And, you know, with the Fab Lab being free and people being able to go there and utilize everything that you can, I don't see why, you know, the trend wouldn't continue where people are trying to grow their own food. And plus, with a lot of the education that comes out and the knowledge where people are like, okay, growing this stuff, it gives me a sense of, like, I guess, wholesomeness, completion, what have you. But then when you taste it, man, I tell you, this last summer, I had one tomato come out of my tomato plant, and I was like, yes, I got you. Tasting that tomato in comparison to a tomato bought from the store, whether it's aroma, a beefsteak, or even on the vine, it's, you can't compare it. It's what is this, non-comparable, is that a word? But it's just, it's not. You can't. And so once people realize that, like, oh, this food tastes so much more, and it's so much more nutrient efficient.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was kind of blown away by the whole alternative growing thing, and I'm gonna throw this out to Allie in just a second. But when I first went in to work with the classes, it was like, okay, how do we connect this? How do we make this work? What do we talk about? And engineering has a lot of concepts that translate really well. You know, just the basic building the rig and what's the rig gonna look like can come into it. But Allie showed me what she was doing in her class, and I'm gonna ask you to go over some of the different techniques for alternative growing, because I was completely ignorant, and she showed me a PowerPoint, and it was just like five or six different methods to grow food, and I gotta say I was blown away. Allie, talk about some of these systems.
So my favorite right now that we've implemented in the past year is aquaponics. And aquaponics is basically building a interdependent system based on a protein, usually a fish, a produce, usually some type of leafy green, and bacteria. The only thing that's added to the system once those things are found and are able to harmonize is food and the food for the fish. The fish then excrete waste. Waste is broken down in a two-step process of nitrification, where ammonia, which is fish waste, is broken down by beneficial bacteria into nitrite, and then more a secondary breakdown into nitrate, which is the plant available form. You also then control the solid waste breakdown in a process called mineralization, which leaves the remaining nutrients for the plants to benefit from. So it is this beneficial relationship that's taking place. You can do it anywhere, indoors, outdoors, depending on the environment. And it's fascinating because it is this harmonious system that's based on basically three factors that you control. And it really is an alternative to food scarcity, and especially in urban areas where there's food deserts, you can have both protein and vegetables available to people in your neighborhood.
So what's the difference between hydroponics and aquaponics? Because you hear these terms thrown around a lot, and I want you to rip this apart for me.
Sure. Hydroponics, we're just feeding plants a nutrient solution in the configuration of what they need when they need it. And aquaponics, you're using, you know, your protein, their waste and beneficial bacteria in symbiosis to provide what's needed for the plants.
That's very cool. I mean, rethinking the way we make food to me is amazing. And that's why you guys are so relevant, and why we're also starting to bring some advanced manufacturing in. Because I know I've heard about things, and maybe you guys can give me more information on this, where you have vertical gardens, right? So you have like tiers of gardens, and you have to calculate. And I always assume this is like a calculation of how much dirt is there, how much water do you need, how much sunlight needs to permeate it. But if you take, you know, 10 square feet of ground, but now you can actually multiply it by 10 with a vertical garden, that's going to provide a lot of food relief for us as a culture as we move forward. Now, one of the things, there was some other stuff too. The thing that was the coolest about your presentation was when you had a bale of hay and you were growing stuff on it.
Actually, we've implemented those. So we were able to get a capital request for an LED lighting system. So that's changed our program, basically. Right now we have 50 straw bales. Straw bale growing is very popular. It's basically taking sterile straw, decomposing it and to a point where there's enough organic matter to support plant growth. And right now we have 50 bales in the greenhouse supporting various vegetable growth and development for my spring vegetable science class, which always kind of gets the short end of the stick because they're not in the growing season. Well, now we can provide that for them. They can see it. It's amazing you can grow on concrete. You can grow in old parking lots, and there's an organization in Chicago that's doing that.
I have a question. So you can grow right out of a bale of hay?
You bet. Straw.
Straw with no soil.
Yep.
Wow.
You said awesome. You need urea for that.
Yes, yeah. It needs to do an initial breakdown. There needs to be organic matter in the straw to support, you know, to actually hold water, and so the root system has access to it. But once that process is over, the bales can be used for 2 to 3 seasons, depending on how much use you get out of them. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And so is that referred to as alternative growing then?
So we made this umbrella course because there's traditional methods and then there's methods outside tradition and convention, right? And so as a umbrella term, alternative growing would be the best way to package.
Wow, that's
that.
Super cool.
I mean, it makes sense too, because you just talking about people needing land and stuff like that, there's a lot of people that, you know, have limited spaces now, especially people being in apartment complexes or a lot more renters, you know, you don't have that space to go. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that in my apartment complex, they give people a little bit of, you know, leeway to do stuff that's, you know, kind of on their already mulched landscape, as long as you're not going too crazy with it. But you can't say the same for that for everywhere else, for everyone else, you know.
Mike, you had a reflection?
Yeah, so then I think Allie kind of simplified alternative growing for us as any growing method that does not require in-ground or soil.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And that kind of simplifies it to pretty much anything that is not outside.
So, Mike and Brent, I walk into your apartment, and there's a bunch of bales of straw, and you guys are growing all your food right there, right?
I'm on a half acre in Waterford, so I have everything.
I think my property manager would like that, but, you know.
You have to wrestle Brent for that tomato he got
last
time.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Can't get it away from me.
But the best thing is my wife has been so supportive of me doing this, and we've just kind of experimented at home, and it's cool having access to Allie outside of the classroom to say, hey, we're thinking of doing this. What do you think? And she can kind of bounce ideas off. So now I'm trying to push her into, like, the hydroponics or the aquaponics, and I'll see how far I get with that.
Sky's the limit. You can buy stuff online, too, now, right? The things
Correct.
That grow tomatoes and peppers.
Right.
Well, one of the first assignments is for students to explore what there is out there. We have some systems that are just simple tower systems. Their footprint is maybe, 3x3? With full halo lighting systems that support, I mean, you can grow 28 different types of plants in them. You can for sure grow fruiting vegetables if you want, if you had enough support to do that. But you could be having fresh produce, a head of lettuce, every single day in succession, right? If you do it with planning.
That's really cool. Like, I'm growing illiterate. So how much, like, yield would the average person get off, say, like, a bale of straw?
Well, depending on what you're growing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you can support full tomato plants. So, you know, that's 80 pounds, depending on what your kind of tomato
wow.
you're growing. But
wow.
then lettuce, continuous lettuce. And the fun thing is you can put things on the side. That all of that space is for growing, as long as you can keep it, the nutrient content where it's supposed to be, and keep it watered.
Dang, that's so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
And I think people forget, too, that seeds are cheap. So you can get a packet of 100 seeds of kohlrabi for $2 rather than go and spend $2 to $3 for that bunch of 2 kohlrabi in the store. And the best thing, too, is with alternative growing, once something is done, you can just continuously plug seeds in for whatever it is you want. So you just have a constant flow of greens or fruiting vegetables or tomatoes, you know, whatever it is that you want.
I mean, that's win-win on multiple levels, because you can save money by growing your own. You're growing your own food. It's going to be a better quality food. As Brent pointed out, it gives you some psychological balance if you enjoy growing things. And then it helps with some of the food insecurity that we're experiencing. And I could even say having more green in our environment is also going to help with carbon dioxide. I mean, it's a small amount for, you know, houseplants cleaning the air, but it's still,
right.
it's just winning on every level.
But more importantly, back to what you were talking earlier, my wife and I have a little garden in the backyard where we do some of this stuff, and we can probably 80 to 100 quarts of salsa a year. We can a bunch of other things out of this little small patch of garden.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Yeah, all the other stuff is cool and everything, but what's amazing to me is the taste. Back to what you talked about. The taste is, it's indescribable, the difference between something that is grown locally in your backyard for some reason and something that you store-bought.
Oh, yeah.
It's the flavor, the texture, the whole nine yards. It's just unspeakable.
Well, you have to remember that everything that you buy in the store has to be pre-harvested, shipped, and if you're cooling down tomatoes, you're basically eliminating their sugars, and which is why we love them so much. And the things you're buying in the store are 3 to 4 weeks old because of that whole process of harvest and shipping and getting to where, I mean, it's fresh, right? When you pull it out, it's four hours old.
One of the problems we have with our garden is half the produce doesn't even make it into the kitchen to get processed because it gets eaten by my daughter and my wife and everything. And they just start mowing. I'm like, wait a minute, we were supposed to use some of this stuff. But it does. The taste is just remarkable. Now, in terms of your class is predominantly on the Kenosha campus.
Yes, we have first and second semester classes at Elkhorn, but the third and fourth semesters are solely at the Kenosha campus.
And what's really cool about us, we're at the SC Johnson IMET Center up in Sturtevant, which is basically almost halfway in between both areas.
It is.
And so it makes it convenient, wherever area you're at Gateway, to make it over to the SC Johnson IMET Center to work with the Fab Lab and incorporate some of these things into your class.
Now, we're seeing some really good reciprocation, I guess is the best way to talk about it. Sometimes when I work with a group and I'm trying to show them cool ways they can make stuff, which is pretty much what the Fab Lab is, sometimes I get people who are like, whatever, I got to be to work in 10 minutes or whatever. And then sometimes I get people who are just like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like Brent, today you were doing some design on the computer for the rig he had drawn out. And he did really amazing pencil drawings too, had it all kind of planned out. And every time I'd say, have you thought about this? He's like, yeah, I thought about that. It's like, all right, cool. So he was really enjoying it. I know the first time that we worked with the groups, I was able to kind of talk to them a little bit too about, okay, you're making a growing rig. You want to make it efficient. You want to divide your space, your light, your time, your air. You've got your chemistry that's involved in it. I said, but have you thought about how it looks? And frequently in engineering, we're looking at aesthetics. So then they started going, oh, well, it's in front of this window and the window is this shape. What if I were to just tweak this on my rig and make it, or I make it so it's on wheels and it can go in multiple spots? Or so a lot of times we find engineers in particular, and then people in other disciplines, tend to design better when they're thinking about how something looks. Now, I'm going to take a little bit of a left turn here because I want to get to some more of these growing rigs, but I want to say my wife became obsessed with aquaponics about a year ago. So I'm going to say this, if you are interested in this at all, reach out to us. You can contact the Fab Lab. Our email is very easy, fablab@gtc.edu. We can connect you with these programs. My wife, who hates school, who hates, she just scraped by in college, trying to get what she wanted. She's like, I might need to take that class. And it's like, yeah, you need to take it. Now, throw out some more of the terms for me. Dutch bucket. What the heck is that? They go, I got to get my Dutch bucket done. I'm like, what the heck's a Dutch bucket?
So Dutch buckets are a method of growing. Sometimes it's called beta bucket growing, but the Dutch are responsible for the growing method.
Thus the Dutch and
bucket. Yes.
He can be taught, people. He can be taught.
It is the most widely used method of propagation for hydroponics in commercial production. So it's basically a bucket system where the media...
So Dutch and then bucket for the bucket.
There you go, for the wind.
Wow.
Where your substrate is kept, whatever it is, if it's sand, if it's,
clay pebbles,
perlite, whatever you're using to grow in. So where your root system will actually grow and the nutrient solution.
So it doesn't matter what the growing medium is then. You can do, you said clay and sand?
Yep. Expanded clay pellets, sand, perlite, vermiculite. It just really depends. You can just grow in straight water as long as you have some type of, ballast to keep the plants upright. So it really does depend on what your goals are, what space is available, what resources are available.
Scott, you got that? That's the alternative part of the alternative growing?
Yes.
The clay and the sand?
That's awesome.
Okay.
Make sure your pH and EC range are in those parameters.
Yeah, that's right.
Got it.
Contact us for that.
That's why you need to take the class.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than just throwing a plant into a bucket and hoping.
Dutch bucket.
Yeah.
If you see some scorch on those leaves.
Right. There's a huge science behind doing it correctly. Yeah. And that's what's amazing about having this program at Gateway, especially just the class, where people can explore and learn about this stuff and then figure out ways of going about incorporating this into whatever lifestyle they're living.
Well, it's fun because it's almost like there's no wrong answers to. We have the freedom to explore those ideals. You know, we've seen what has been done, and then we're sent on missions to go explore and see what's out there, and then it's like, okay, what can you come up with?
How do you improve upon?
Yeah, and it's nice because a lot of these things, what was our budget? Like $40 out of $150?
Right now, yeah.
And so compared to some of these machines that, you know, you're getting something that's probably a little more standardized that you're buying online, but it's like $200 to $300.
Correct.
Versus what ours is going to be out of recycled material.
There are rigs that I've saw people build just going through YouTube as we were researching stuff that take the black and yellow totes. And between that tote and the PVC and the pump, the whole cost of it was maybe $70 for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So your initial cost up front might be a little expensive, but once you get that, you're saving money long run on food.
And you're upcycling, you know.
Yeah.
So part of the parameters of the design and build of the system was recycling, reusing, and upcycling. How much? What was my percentage?
40%.
And then Gateway, or the department, provided pumps and emitters and tubing. And, you know, the profile of the rig had to be 18 inches, and it had to fit in a window. Or near a window, so that was you could use lighting systems, but it was meant to be in a small space, be created for a small space, and be able to assemble take down really easily, disassemble.
Yeah, and that's definitely a Fab Lab thing. We could show you how to make slot and drop stuff with plywood. It's a very popular concept in maker culture currently. So you see a lot of furniture that's that. When it's not in use, it just slots apart and it goes under the bed. Now, Allie, describe what you mean by upcycle. I'm a little slow on that one.
So, I mean, just instead of using a reuse, you're changing the usage of it, right, to fit your need. So, Mike's had some work done around his house and had been under remodeling for a year. Yeah, right. So he's got all this lumber around. He has, you know, food safe barrels around. And now he is, instead of it just hanging out at his house, he's turning it into part of the materials that are needed for the project.
Piping. So almost like targeted repurposing.
Targeted repurposing.
Some great terminology.
We are figuring out better terminology as we go.
Now, we talked a little bit about lighting. Light, when it comes to growing things, I know is essential. And these rigs have to take into account the permeation of sunlight. But Allie, you mentioned before LEDs, and there's been a lot of progress in LEDs over the last 10 years. And I know from my previous job where I worked in a museum, LED lights kind of changed the reality for museum conservation. So tell me how that's come into play on growing rigs, LEDs, or...
So right now we have a Gen 2 Philips LED system. It is the closest in full spectrum technology that's out there. It is missing a very small sliver of the yellow into red spectrum, which is what plants actually use the least amount and they can go without. It ends up losing some internal coloring that when you slice into a tomato or a strawberry and it has this really full, rich color throughout when you're using LED.
Wow. And that's related to a real small spectrum of the light?
Super small spectrum of the light.
Huh.
That's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
But the plant uses, the spectrum of light when it needs it during its growth and development process. And so right now with LED lighting, it's as close as you can get. It's cheaper to run. They're cool lights. They're more expensive than HID lighting, which is, you know, traditionally what you would use in interior growing, which are a lot cheaper to buy.
HID is like an ultraviolet type of a thing?
It's a full spectrum, high intensity.
I don't think I've heard that. Oh, high intensity.
Yep.
Okay.
So it has a full spectrum. It's warm. It's very hot to run, which is good in the winter, right? You're making up for some heating system, you know, some heat loss and things. And it's cheap to buy. It's very expensive to run. So running LEDs is, you know, the cost has come.
And they're supposed to last longer.
They
right?
are.
So
we have five.
Once you have the initial investment.
We have 5 years. If we were to run them on a 12-hour, 12 on, 12 off, 365, and we would only lose 10% over 5 years. So we're not running them that intensely, but that's a really nice life.
Yeah, and they're only going to get better, right, as they learn more about.
Yes.
One of the things I find intriguing about growing rigs is at what point could you get it so it's self-sufficient? So you literally put the seeds in and
walk
away.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's what we're about.
Actually, one of the first assignments is to find other growing rigs that are out there. And was it your group that found?
We found one called the Superponics 16, which is out of a company in California. And it runs on three different systems. So overwater feeding and watering, deep water culture, and bubble and aeroponics. So what ends up happening if any one system fails, you still have the other two as backup.
Wow. Integrated all into one rig.
All in one little container.
And controlled, of course, by an app with your phone, so you can leave for weeks at a time, and you still have...
Control with your phone?
The,
really?
That was the Garden 3.0. That was like the $1,000
rig. Yeah, that was $1,000 rig.
That had monitors and cameras for monitoring, but you had to pay for the monthly subscription and...
That is the coolest thing.
There are some really cool options out there for people who are serious about.
But this is where it's really nice, and this is the whole concept of our Fab Lab at 10 a.m., is that you're seeing an application that you all have, and the Fab Lab and the engineering tech wing at the SC Johnson IMET Center helps incorporate all those concepts into reality. And so we have all those systems up there that can help develop these where you're like, I have this idea, and this is a great example of it.
Yeah, okay, so I know we're running out of time here, but Brent, Mike, Allie, on a scale of 1 to 10, how has coming out to the Fab Lab and looking at advanced manufacturing affected or impacted what you know about alternative growing?
Well, first of all, John, you're an artist. You inspired me, the other fellow artist, but... So when you showed us your chair that first day that we went there, I thought that was, you know, really, it really turned some gears in my head. And so the way that I showed you those support beams and stuff like that slot in to the paneling that we have, you know, I would have never thought of that. And the whole point of this project is to use the least amount of screws and, like, hardware, you know, use less hardware like that. And so it was just nice to be able to have those ideas. And it's nice to know that there is a place out there that's open to the public.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of DIY people out there that are probably like, how am I going to do this? I don't even have space for a workbench to cut anything out. Mm-hmm. And so you have a place to where, oh, we have a CNC machine. You just come out here, do your design, and cut it out. And
Mike?
I'll just keep it kind of short and sweet. It's been great to come out there and see you. You know, show us this is everything that we have available to us. And then we take our initial design to you and you help refine us and give us different ways of thinking about it. So I'd say if people have a project, go out there and just do an initial drawing and have the Fab Lab go through and help you refine that.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough for coming out today. Again, you can reach us if you want to give us some feedback or you're interested in the stuff you hear on the program, fablab@gtc.edu.
Thank you guys for coming. I've just got one quick question before we go. How do someone like myself or anyone listening get started in the alternative growing, micro growing? Where would I go? How do I get more information or become a part of what you guys are doing?
You can contact Gateway, talk with an advising specialist.
Thank you to all of our guests today from Gateway Technical College's Alternative Growing Methods class, which is a part of the horticulture program here at Gateway Technical College. This is Scott Nelson of WGTD, and so long until next month's episode of Fab Lab 10 a.m. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha ADRC offers a support group to help family caregivers who care for someone with Alzheimer's disease. The Caregiver Coffee Club meets the first Wednesday of each month, 10 to 11 a.m. For more info, contact